This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at AboutAmazon.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
And I looked at the crisis on the streets. And I thought to myself, I want a city that you see out there doing the work. I want a city that feels incredibly responsive to the most urgent challenges that we're facing. And I just didn't see that from my city government. And so I thought, let me go out there. This city has a lot of power. We have the power to regulate rents. We have the power to build more housing. We have the power to be active and proactive on the issue of homelessness. Yeah. And we're not using those powers. So I went out there and I said, okay, I'm going to run for office.
Yo, welcome to another episode of In a Minute with Evan Lovett, coming to you live from the I Am Studios in the heart of LA. And I am here with the heart and soul of my council district, CD4, with Council Member Nithya Raman, who was the first Asian American woman and first South Asian ever to serve on the LA City Council, and who's now been elected twice, re-elected in 2024. And she represents Silver Lake, Los Feliz, Hollywood Hills, Sherman Oaks, Encino, Van Nuys, Reseda, and Studio City. Nithya Raman, thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And it's worth noting that her district is not only important to me, but this is a very historic district. Hollywood Bowl, the Ford Theater, by the way, in my opinion, the most underrated venue in Los Angeles. Beautiful, intimate, charming. Edendale, which is not on many maps, but is actually the original Hollywood. Griffith Observatory, the Hollywood sign, Ventura Boulevard, Rancho Los Encinos. And did we say Griffith Park?
I don't know, but you said the observatory, which is in Griffith Park.
There you go. Yeah. Excellent district. Before we start, since we're talking about history, I got to mention my sponsor, Arto Brick. Arto Brick is a manufacturer of historic tiles and bricks for landmarks like Olvera Street, Mariachi Plaza, Plaza de Cultura y Artes. Fabricate everything by hand at their factory down in Gardena, employ dozens of people. They say you can't do manufacturing in LA, well, Arto Brick does, and their legacy is all over the city. And a true LA American dream story, third generation immigrant who has made a great legacy here in Los Angeles. And so has Nithya Raman, also an LA American dream story. Tell me first and foremost, what is a perfect day in your district?
Well, I got to say, I have two little kids. I have 10-year-old twins. They just turned 10 a couple weeks ago. And my perfect day is a weekend day with them where I get to go on a hike in Griffith Park. I get to make breakfast for them at home. I get to walk around. We have lunch at Tomato Pie on Hyperion.
Nicely done.
And then we get to go to the park and walk around the reservoir. Like, it is, I feel like my neighborhood and all the places that I can walk to and the sunlight that bathes this city.
Yeah.
I have, when I'm traveling, when I'm away from my children and I close my eyes and I think about LA, I think about the sunlight and my kids walking in front of me and giggling and laughing. And I can't think of a more beautiful place in the world to be.
Excellent. Excellent day. And again, on that light, we had DJ Waldy in here, the who I call the prose laureate of Los Angeles. He's written books on this table, Becoming Los Angeles. The light in Los Angeles actually is scientifically different. That's one of the reasons why filming here, it's not just because we have so much light and so much sunlight, but the, and I cannot explain the science, but something about how it refracts and the mountains affect like the reflection of the sunlight. It really makes it a magical type of sunlight, by the way. So it's not just anecdotal. That is a scientific fact, which will be explained better if you read DJ Waldy, Becoming Los Angeles, or any of his great books.
He's a wonderful essayist.
Oh, man. He's
really
one of my,
remarkable.
I put him on my LA Mount Rushmore, by the way.
Nice.
So he is great. So first and foremost, what is it like representing such a historic and important district?
You know, it is, it's a huge honor. Yeah. It's an incredible privilege to represent this district. And you know, the lines were redrawn after my first year.
Big story.
Historically. Absolutely. Yeah, historical moment.
Right.
For many reasons, right. Not necessarily all good for LA, given that redistricting was what they were discussing on those leaked tapes. But, you know, the district is historic. It has all these incredible artifacts in it. It has Griffith Park in it. It has the zoo. It has the observatory. It has the Hollywood sign. It has so much of what people think of when they think about Los Angeles. Yeah. So it feels like an incredible privilege to be able to care for these places, care for these emblems of Los Angeles. It's also a place that I think has a lot of constituents who have a lot of needs. And so it is also a challenging district to represent. And, you know, I think making sure that we can invite people to visit us, invite people to visit the Hollywood sign while still making sure that people can live here in comfort, that they can enjoy their neighborhoods, that has been, I think, an ongoing challenge for Council District 4.
So you mentioned it's a challenging district, and I can attest. Again, this is my home district, so I see it in first person. There are many vocal homeowners and residents, and seemingly every issue that comes up, homeowners have a lot to say. And you are something of a lightning rod in the district, and you maintain your strength and continue to kind of push through. I want to know, what is your vision of CD4? How can you, or even for Los Angeles, if you want to look on a grander scale?
So, you know, I think it's, you've talked about this, Evan, on your podcast and on your Instagram. I think it's no secret to anybody. LA is struggling right now.
Okay.
LA is going through a very, very tough moment.
Absolutely.
Between the fires, the ICE raids,
the Hollywood
entertainment industry bottoming out right now.
Restaurants failing.
We are going through an incredible economic moment of challenge at a moment when we're also facing these natural disasters, federal challenges, hundreds of millions of dollars being lost from our homelessness funding, housing funding from the federal government. I mean, this is a very, very tough moment in LA. And I think for me, my vision for Los Angeles is one where we really get, it's really one that's built on housing.
Right.
We have to be a city where people can afford to live here, where people can afford to move here, where people can afford to build their dreams here.
Right.
What I've seen over the last couple of years in particular is that people saw their entertainment industry jobs being questioned. Then they saw the cost of living here, how much they were paying for rent, how much they were paying for childcare. And rather than choosing to stay in LA
and to build their dreams in Los Angeles, they're leaving.
Right, right.
And that's devastating for the city. And I think we have to fix that. And my dream for LA in the future is that it's a place where you have abundant, affordable housing,
yeah,
and where people can really come here and build their dreams here, exactly like my husband did when he wanted to come and write for TV.
Right.
And that it's open for not just creatives in the entertainment industry, but for people who want to start businesses here, people who want to just build their lives here, that it becomes a place of effervescence again and magic. And I think that is really centered on housing.
And I think one thing you always continuously sell me on, which is true, is that, or that remind me, I should say, is that this is a magnet for people from all around the world. It goes without saying, and I will say this a million times and continue pounding the table. I mean, whether it's the most Koreans outside of Korea, Mexicans outside of Mexico, Salvadorians, Cambodians, Ugandans, Los Angeles, there are so many ethnicities where Los Angeles has more than anywhere outside of that, the capital city in that country, which it makes it a very special thing. And it really is, you know, the true melting pot for the 21st century. And people need a place to live. My wife's family was a family of immigrants. And, you know, she tells me stories where, you know, six of her uncles were living in a garage at the same time. But, you know, everybody works hard, save money, rent a place. And right now, affordable housing is a main issue, and it's your hallmark issue. And you recently just had a victory capping rent hikes, mm-hmm, right? Which is a step in that way, yeah, in that direction. Tell me about that, first of all.
So, you know, we have the majority of our rental units. So LA is a city of majority renters.
Right.
And the majority of our rental units here are covered by something called a rent stabilization ordinance.
Right.
It's not total rent control, right? Because when you leave a unit, it bumps back up to market rate. But when you're in it, it allows for rent increases to be modulated so that you're not gouged by landlords. Many landlords are wonderful. Some landlords are looking to take advantage,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so rent stabilization really helps people stay stable in their homes. But LA's formula was actually written 40 years ago when the rent stabilization ordinance was first put in place and has never changed. And that moment 40 years ago was a time of extraordinarily high inflation in LA.
Yeah.
We had, you know, across the country, in fact. And so we were facing double digit inflation. And at that time, the formula, which set a floor of 3% and a cap of 8%,
yeah,
that felt like it was a real relief for
reasonable
renters.
Reasonable at the time.
Reasonable right, at the time, right? But now when people are facing such incredible pressures on affordability, that rent formula has actually meant that over the past 40 years, more than half of those years, our rent allowable rent increases have actually been higher than inflation, while people's paychecks are not increasing.
Yeah.
And so what our new rent formula does is to set a floor of 1% and a cap of 4%. And takes away some of the unfair charges, including an additional 10% charge if you had a second kid.
Wow.
you were actually disincentivized from having kids in LA.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the formula, I think, is fairer.
Yeah.
It's still, based on the research that we've done, still allows landlords to be able to make a profit and run their units well, while making sure that Angelenos can still afford to live in LA.
You mentioned something, landlords, you have to deal constantly. And again, I probably have a closer perspective of your day-to-day than any of the other council people, just by virtue of being in your district. You have to deal constantly with both sides. And this is part of politics anywhere.
Yeah.
But how do you manage the balance of look, because I know how business is, whether it's developers, landlords on that side, they're breathing down your neck, knocking down your door, talking to your staff. You know, this isn't right for us. We can't,
yeah,
in short, maximize our profit,
right,
which, you know, in a capitalist society is all right, blah, blah, blah. But also the needs of the people and your constituents and the citizens of Los Angeles. How do you balance just from a macro perspective? Because that is so difficult, but it's paramount in politics.
I think, first of all, you have to listen.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of listening.
And I will vouch for that, by the way. She is not just lip service. Nithya is always in the streets, always talking to people. She came to our neighborhood's July 4th parade. That was the first time we ever met.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's a tiny relative to the size of the city or even your district. And I was so touched, and you were genuinely like there enjoying it, talking to people, some people not so nice, but you're there for the conversations. And I really respect that. But go on. You do a lot of listening.
So I do a lot of listening, and I do a lot of listening to everyone, whether people are happy with what we're doing, whether people are angry with what we're doing. I really do try and get out there and listen. Yeah. The other thing is that I think we have to be driven by data and research. We have to be looking at, you know, what are costs here? If you're talking about rents, what does profitability look like for landlords? How can we make sure that landlords are making enough money to maintain their building stock? Right. That's a problem that they're actually facing in New York because the policies there are skewed in a different direction. So some of their older buildings are actually crumbling. Here in Los Angeles, our rent formula was so generous that we don't have that same problem.
Right.
But it was really punishing for renters, right? And that's what the research showed us. And so we were able to use the research and use all the inputs that we were getting to hopefully guide us to what is a good decision for Los Angeles. But the other thing I just want to say is that you don't just pass a law and walk away. Like we have to make sure that we're revisiting it. We have to make sure that we're continuing to listen. Is it being implemented appropriately? Is it having unintended consequences? There's lots of decisions that we make which have unintended consequences. We have to be willing to go back and fix those.
Look, I'm jumping ahead kind of. I always have this script and these questions, but you're so fascinating and passionate, but like in a focused way. You know, I'm passionate, but I get excited. I'm like, I like that. But you're passionate. Is that what drove you into politics in the first place? Like where did, and we're going to get, I want to get your whole origin story, but just the decision to get into politics.
Yeah.
Where did that come from and how long was that percolating?
Not that long, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually never thought I would be a politician. It wasn't like I studied urban planning.
Yes.
I worked with people who were very, very poor in India.
Yeah.
You know, I worked in slums there. I studied urban poverty and international development and urban planning at MIT.
Yeah.
And I love cities. I love working in cities. Like they are awesome. And I love this city in particular. Like this is a place, I grew up on the East Coast, outside of Boston.
Massachusetts, correct.
Yes.
And didn't you spend time in Louisiana? Is that true? I couldn't confirm that, but
when we
I
I moved to America with my parents.
Yeah.
And when we first moved here, we moved to Louisiana. And then my dad got a job in the Boston area. Yeah. So
By the way, Louisiana, the actual LA, when I say LA, without periods, I'm referring to Louisiana. And everybody always shorthands it, LA. And I'm like, we're not talking about Louisiana, but that's a whole different discussion.
Okay, right. From LA to LA. That's the Nithya Raman story. So we moved to the Boston area. And then as an adult, I moved to Los Angeles because my husband was a writer and he had a job here. Okay. And this city in particular, I think, is incredible. It is, you know, so diverse. It's so welcoming. It's so open for people to come and build their dreams here. And I could feel the difference. The difference in Los Angeles is palpable to me.
Yes.
And having lived in other places, I think I have the, I have a love of Los Angeles that only a transplant can have in some ways.
Ooh. Go on.
You know, it's the same way I feel about America. Like I'm critical of our country, but I know what it gave me and my family.
Yeah.
And I know so clearly what Los Angeles gave me and gives so many of the people who come here. And so I'm really, really passionate about it. And so I was just trying to find ways to serve. And I started this homelessness volunteer group in my neighborhood, CELA. Yeah. So I joined my neighborhood council's homelessness committee, met up with a few other people in other nearby neighborhoods.
And you were on the Silver Lake neighborhood?
Yeah, I was council. I was not on the board, but I was chaired the homelessness committee there.
Okay.
And it's not an elected position, by the way. They're desperately seeking volunteers.
That's a difficult. I mean, difficult task.
Yes.
I mean, just to even start wrapping your arms around. Yeah.
And I met up with people from Los Feliz and other surrounding neighborhoods, and all of us really wanted to do something about homelessness. We saw more tents, we saw more people on the streets, and we wanted to get out there and help.
Yeah.
And so we started this just a little volunteer group where we would meet up on Saturdays and go out, and you know, we'd have breakfast burritos, and we'd bring a little thing of coffee, and we'd go out from tent to tent. We'd talk to people. And then we would advocate for them. We'd reach out to service providers during the week and make sure that people were getting connected to services.
Right.
And from that came this little nonprofit called CELA that continues to operate in that area. The reason I decided to run for office was because we were trying to get a meeting with our local elected representative at the time. And
We tried for a long time. We wanted certain kinds of policy decisions, and it just felt like he wasn't listening. Mm-hmm. And I looked at
common refrain.
And I looked at the crisis on the streets, and I thought to myself, I want a city that you see out there doing the work. I want a city that feels incredibly responsive to the most urgent challenges that we're facing. And I just didn't see that from my city government. And so I thought, let me go out there. This city has a lot of power. We have the power to regulate rents. We have the power to build more housing. We have the power to be active and proactive on the issue of homelessness. Yeah. And we're not using those powers. So I went out there and I said, okay, I'm going to run for office. Wow. I'm going to run against this guy because I want to tell people about the power of the city. And I want to tell people to expect more from their city government.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is your reminder that shoes are a gift, literally. So unwrap something good, like boots that inspire your next big adventure, or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in, or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes, they're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you and everyone on your list at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at AboutAmazon.com.
And look, you were, and a great motivation right there, and a good kind of just origin story for politics. And I still want to go back further, but first, since we're talking about that election, you ran on a quote unquote, or you didn't say this, Frank, but you were deemed an outsider.
Yeah.
And it was outsider camp because you definitely were not a political insider at that point.
I had never met a single person in the building, I don't think, in City Hall before I ran.
It's pretty cool. And you were the first outsider to defeat an incumbent in the LA City Council in 17 years,
yeah,
which is pretty darn impressive because, again, it's always the network and it's always kind of the same old retreads or people move around, move the pieces around. But you also had endorsements from high up. You had some pretty significant endorsements. If my research is correct, I want to say Pelosi, Hillary Clinton.
Actually, Bernie Sanders endorsed me, okay, which was amazing.
That was the third, yeah.
Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton actually endorsed my opponent.
Really? Yes.
And so it was this crazy city council.
Research team. Where's my research team? Come on.
It was this crazy city council race. A city council race.
Oh, yeah.
Where all these national figures were weighing in. And
it was during the pandemic and people were online all the time and people cared about this race.
Yeah.
From all over America. It was like wild, yeah. You know?
Why do you think that was? And also, what was that like for you as somebody who wasn't really in politics? Like, and I remember it was a bit, you became a big name like overnight as a quote outsider. It was a big deal.
Yeah. You know, to me, it was like first of all, it was completely unexpected for me. You know, I really ran because I was like, a campaign is a useful tool to make people care about this city that I care about so much.
Yeah.
And it was it gives you an opening to go and knock on someone's door and to have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
Right. And to tell them, hey, you're a renter here. The city can do more for you. Hey, you're on the verge of homelessness. The city can do more for you. And so I did not go into it expecting that it would become this big thing, but a number of circumstances ended up getting us there. It was, you know, it was the moment of incredible civic engagement when after the murder of George Floyd, yes, people were deeply engaged in cities. People were also home because of the pandemic.
Good point.
And they were in front of their computers and they wanted to engage on something. They had time on their hands.
Yeah.
And so this was a pathway to doing it. In my primary, we knocked on tens of thousands of doors. In the general election, we wrote tens of thousands of postcards because we couldn't go and knock on doors.
Yeah.
And all of these volunteers got engaged because I think they believed in what a better vision of Los Angeles could look like. One that was anchored in hope for the city,
yeah,
a hope for a more welcoming city. And one that looked different from the Los Angeles that they were in at that moment, which felt to them, I think, like it had room for improvement.
It was time for transition.
Yeah.
It's time to evolve into something new. And now going back, you were born in India, correct? Kerala, is that the—
Kerala.
No, that's okay.
No,
terrible.
All good. You got my name right, which I was very grateful for.
Well, hopefully. Yeah. At least your name. You also went back to India, and this, I'm probably going to botch this one, Chennai. Okay, Chennai.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where you did a lot of studying as far as you were working in urban poverty. You were studying, researching urban poverty and everything like that.
Yeah, I worked in Delhi. I worked in Chennai. I worked with the poorest of the poor there, people who lived in slums and informal settlements and, you know, what some people call shanty towns or... it was an incredible journey, and I got to meet some of the most interesting people I've ever met in my life.
Did that shape your obviously shape your worldview, but as far as your relationship with Los Angeles or even seeing it, I don't want to compare it.
Yeah.
But look, Los Angeles had this hugely developing homeless issue. Let's call it what it is. And I know it's different. You know, it is
really different.
Yeah.
So in India, poverty and slums, slums are driven by poverty.
Right.
And the people who are there, I mean, it is not just here, you know, homelessness is 70,000 people in a county of 10 million, right?
Right.
Their slums and informal settlements can be millions and millions of people. In some cities, it's the majority of a city is in living in those kinds of settlements. And they're driven by poverty and a search for opportunity.
Right.
In many ways, slums are described as villages within cities. Like people move from a village for the opportunity of a city. And again, coming back to what a city can mean for people, it's a place where they can build their future. It's a place where they can seek out opportunities. And so I don't know that it connected me to the homelessness crisis, which is driven much more by, yes, poverty, but also mental health issues, substance abuse challenges. You know, it's those are two very different populations.
Okay.
But I think the idea that you could go into a place and you would be able to access a new life for yourself.
Right.
That was always so appealing to me. Like a city is a place to re-envision yourself.
Right.
It's a break from your history. It's a break from strictures, and oppression from the past. Here in Los Angeles, you see that, for example, in you know, people who are coming, who are LGBTQ and come here because they're fleeing oppression from their communities,
absolutely,
you know? So like you can see those things paralleling here in this city, but I think the homelessness crisis and poverty in India are very different.
Okay. So let's dive into the homelessness issue. We can't avoid it. I've seen the numbers. There's some improvement. I see it in my district, and I will go on record there. And I've contacted your office before and since LA in a Minute, you know, encampments, all this kind of stuff. There's definitely been improvement. All right. Is it perfect? Are we at zero home? No, of course we're not. But there's progress being made. Tell me about what you're seeing and what you see or what you hope to see in the near future. As far
so, I think there is progress being made. And I think that it's good to important to acknowledge that progress because it is progress for the first time in many years.
Yeah.
Right. For more than a decade, we had increases in homelessness. Right. We sometimes had double digit increases in homelessness. Yeah. And for the past 2 years citywide, and for the past during my term in our district, we've actually seen either homelessness, unsheltered homelessness, numbers of people living on the streets. That's the thing that matters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That number has either stayed flat or gone down significantly in both Council District 4 and in the city as a whole. And acknowledging that progress, whatever you may say about the data and all the questions around it, you know,
of course,
acknowledging that progress and the fact that we've changed a very, very worrying trajectory in Los Angeles is hugely important. Does that mean that we don't have incredible amounts of work to do? Absolutely not. There's so much work to be done ahead. And I think we have to maintain that progress now in the face of hundreds of millions of dollars of federal cuts, potentially.
Right. So how does that happen?
I don't know. And I think we have to figure that out right now. But one thing that I've really been pushing on is greater oversight at the city and management of our homelessness crisis and the dollars that we're putting towards it. So the city of Los Angeles, you know, I worked there briefly in 2014.
Okay.
And worked on homelessness, actually, and wrote a report for the city looking at how much the city was spending on homelessness.
Okay.
And the city at that time was spending something like $10 million addressing homelessness head on with services and housing, mostly passed through grants from the federal government.
Okay.
And over $100 million dealing with homelessness, whether it was through cleanups or whether it was through arrests of people experiencing homelessness. Nothing that would actually just end the
solution, which are not solutions.
Right, yeah. Right. Now we spend a lot more money on homelessness, right? A lot more money. But the city of Los Angeles, because it's not a county, the county deals with social services, mental health, all of that.
Yeah.
We never staffed up to make sure that the money that we're spending on homelessness is being spent appropriately.
Mm, painful.
Right?
Yeah.
We did not have a place. I remember when I started my work, you know, I was like, okay, in the district, I want to reform how we do this. I created a homelessness team. We mapped out all of the encampments. We made sure that every encampment was getting outreach. And then we would organize shelter beds and housing opportunities to make sure that people who were living in encampments could actually get access and go indoors,
yeah.
Right? And we kind of hacked the system just through our work, like just through the sheer tenacity of my staff, who are incredible, who are out there, who know pretty much every person who's experiencing homelessness in the district
Absolutely.
By name.
Yeah. Wow.
But at the citywide level, I kept looking, okay, who's actually setting our homelessness policy? Who's monitoring every dollar and making sure that the performance of our investments is where it needs to be? And if not, changing how we're investing those dollars.
Right.
And it turns out there was no place at the city that was really focused on making sure that our dollars were doing what they were supposed to do.
Right.
And so this last budget cycle, we established something called the Bureau of Homelessness Oversight at the Housing Department. We're staffing it up right now, but already we've been collecting data. We're looking at our shelter stock. We're looking at our permanent supportive housing stock. We're filling empty beds. We're now over 90% occupancy in all of our shelters. Sure. We're making sure that every building built through Prop HHH is filled within 90 days,
wow.
every unit.
Okay.
And that when there are vacancies happening, we're filling them quickly as well. And when we started, 75% of those units were filled and 25% were vacant. And now it's inching closer towards 90% occupied, right?
That's good.
So we are, with no extra money spent, we're bringing hundreds of people indoors.
That's great. And that's key. Know? No extra money spent. That makes some people smile.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that is exactly the kind of work that we need to do in the face of federal government cuts, right? We're looking at every dollar that we're spending locally and saying, how can we make sure that every dollar that we're spending is going towards filling these gaps? How can we make sure that every bed is filled? How can we make sure that every unit is being used? How can we make sure that our outreach services are actually going out to every encampment, even if there's fewer teams going out there. We can't do that without active monitoring and oversight from the city. And that's exactly what we're trying to do.
And I can tell you this, just anecdotally from my perspective, when I started LA in a Minute, the main issue, the main concern, you know, even in an episode, what things don't you like about Los Angeles or whatever? Homelessness was number one by a mile for the first 3-4 years I was doing this. And now, not to say it's not an issue, it's still an issue, but it's at least not the one thing that people keep pounding the table on. And you know, again, we have more issues, we have different issues, but there is progress being made. And people need to understand, I'm just going to say this, it's not going to be overnight. It's not going to be in 1 year, 5 years, 10 years. But as long as it's going the right direction and the flow is, the momentum is going the right way, that is progress. And, you know, it sounds like some of these policies are helping, and I see it with my own eyes. So that's a main thing and an important issue that you're making progress on. So thank you for that. Now let's go back to the affordable housing issue.
Yeah.
This is something that we've actually had discussions on. You, from your perspective, are making big progress on that, right? And there's been...
We're making some progress on that. Yeah, we're making some progress on that. But I think like I said, we've done more protections for renters, right? We've hopefully helped people survive what is a very, very hard environment right now in terms of affordability, right? Ultimately, though, we will not be able to lower costs for rents in Los Angeles unless we build more housing.
Building housing, which now the NIMBYs come out of the woodwork, of course. So I want to discuss, and there are affordable housing projects going up, kind of seemingly, I don't want to say left and right, but there have been a lot of approvals for affordable housing projects. One question for me personally is, In residential neighborhoods, in single family neighborhoods, there's one stipulation that kind of raises my eyebrows, is an affordable housing complex can go in. We do need housing, no question, but with no parking. And this is, whether or not we like it, this is a commuter city. This is a driving city. This is a city where people like their autonomy and their car. And I know the stipulations where if it's near transit and all this kind of stuff, but affordable housing going up in neighborhoods with zero parking spots. I just want to talk specifically about that. How is that? Why is that permitted? I'm not phrasing it properly, but again, I'll just give the example. I live in a single family neighborhood. There's an affordable housing building going up in our neighborhood with 100 plus units and zero parking spots. Yeah. And there's already limited parking in our neighborhood, street and otherwise. That's 250 cars coming to the neighborhood, and you can't assume that everybody's going to take the bus or take the train.
Yeah.
So how does that?
So you're talking about a specific program called Executive Directive 1.
Yes, ED1.
This is the mayor's executive directive that she put into place when she was first elected.
Right.
It was Executive Directive 1. It was her first directive.
Right.
And it was designed to increase the supply of affordable housing by saying that for new 100% affordable units with no public subsidy, this is no public dollars being spent on it.
Right.
If you built a building which was 100% affordable housing, that you could have your permits within 60 days. The policy also allowed you to waive some of the requirements, including parking, setbacks, and certain kinds of other requirements that other buildings may have in order to make it possible for developers to be able to build 100% affordable units.
Right.
Because parking spots and some of these other like setbacks from the street and things like that raise the cost of everything.
Correct.
Right.
And so, decrease the profitability for the developer. Just saying.
They don't decrease the profitability for the developer. What developers do when they have to add all of those amenities is that they increase the rent.
Right.
So what they actually do is just raise the rent to match the costs of building the building.
Okay.
And so if you want developers to build the kind of housing that we need in LA, which is affordable housing, you have to be able to say, okay, let's let you cut costs in other ways so that you can charge the rents that we want you to charge. Keep in mind, these are not publicly funded buildings. These are not taxpayer dollars.
True.
This is private money being invested. And ED1 was a policy that was designed to incentivize the private market to build the kind of housing we most desperately need.
Right, right.
Now, the building that was approved for your neighborhood is actually no longer allowed by ED1. They've changed the rules so that you can't build a building like that in a single family neighborhood, right? So it was those entitlements, the application for that building went in before the law was changed.
Yeah.
But they changed that, you know, the mayor changed that in response to neighborhood feedback, exactly like what she got from your neighborhood, right? Saying, we don't want to see this kind of building in our. But overall, you asked about, you know, single family homes and big affordable housing and parking and all of that. And I would like to take a step back and just say,
okay,
let's think about what it would look like to do better planning for the entire city, right?
And this is, and speaking of step back, this is where I was going with it. And to be clear, we were pro affordable housing. I just want it done responsibly in line with the neighborhood. And to that point where I think that ultimately it's like, well, the vision is going to be, you know, we have better transit and rail and bus and all this kind of stuff. So once the city is established like that, then of course we're going to want all this housing everywhere, but it's not yet like that. And that transition is going to be difficult, if not impossible in some areas. So then, okay, thusly, take.
Yeah, I mean, I would look at, for example, our housing element program, right? Which was designed to, a new plan that the city had to put in place to, mandated by the state, that says, plan for a lot more housing.
Yeah.
You know, the city is lacking 500,000 units of housing, not just affordable.
Was this the missing middle, the CHIP program?
The CHIP program, yeah, okay, right? Okay, so you, and I know you've done some videos about that.
Sure, yeah.
It was a mandate from the state to say, you have not built enough housing in Los Angeles. Right. There's a huge affordability gap. There's a huge housing shortage. Find space in your city, zone for 500,000 more units of housing in Los Angeles. And through the CHIP program, what the city did, the planning department did, is to say, along our major boulevards and thoroughfares, let's give more density, allow for more density.
Yeah.
Let's allow for greater height. And let's make sure that if you build affordable housing, you can actually build even a little bit higher and reduce some of the requirements that you have on that housing. And along our major boulevards and thoroughfares, we also have major transit lines.
True.
We have major bus lines. And I think thinking about planning in this way, not on a project by project basis in particular neighborhoods, but really thinking about the whole city, we can put into place rules that actually generate the kind of housing we want and need in LA.
And
I think that's the vision that I have for LA, is that let's build more densely, particularly along our major boulevards and thoroughfares, particularly near transit, and make sure that we are generating a lot more units, affordable for sure, but also other units, because most people don't even qualify for affordable housing, right?
That's interesting. I've heard that feedback where it's actually very difficult.
It's very difficult. You have to have a very low income level, and deed restricted affordable units only account for a very small fraction of the total market.
Mm.
When most people talk about affordable housing, what they're talking about is that they go out into the rental marketplace and they find a rent that's affordable to them.
Yeah, of course.
Not that they are contracted and have an income requirement and meet it. It's just affordable.
Right.
Like the city will become personal. Affordable, right?
Right?
And that means building not just affordable housing, but housing at every income level, to a point where Los Angeles, the market rate rent becomes something that is more affordable. That used to be the case in Los Angeles. It's no longer the case anymore. But if you can put more supply in, I think you can actually lower costs, as you've seen in other cities that have done this.
So the progress you're seeing, let's say specific on affordable housing, are you happy with it? Is there more that needs to be done? Like, what do you see at this point?
Well, we've now put rules in place that I think allow for more density, but because of a number of reasons, including very, very high interest rates and economic instability at the national level, we are actually not seeing that new housing production yet. But I'm hopeful that we will. And what I'm doing in the meantime is making sure that the city gets out of its own way.
Right.
Right. We say we want more housing in Los Angeles, and then the city has put into place incredible amounts of red tape when people want to build.
Right.
That's incredible notorious. Amounts.
Absolutely.
And so what I've been doing is pretty systematically since, especially this year, saying, how can we reduce the red tape for the thing that is identified as the biggest need in Los Angeles? How can we reduce red tape for new housing? So that means rather than going through a very long and complicated permitting process from the city for simple, straightforward buildings, can you self-certify with a licensed engineer or architect certifying that these buildings are following the rules,
right?
With an auditing program that makes sure that that system is very much in, robust.
Okay.
Can you do, can you build on smaller lots? Can you build buildings that allow for a single stairwell like you have in Europe or many major cities across the world that is, you know, relatively safe for buildings up to 4 to 6 stories? Can you build with a single stairwell rather than mandating 2 stairwells? So that allows you to build on smaller lots. Can you think about actually collapsing some of our incredibly complicated processes across building and safety, Department of Transportation, Department of City Planning, forestry, urban forestry, to get a permit related to a tree.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like dealing with a tree on a property that you're trying to build on can take months to resolve.
I've seen it, absolutely.
The city needs to get out of its own way if we want to build more housing. And so that's really what I've been focused on as we wait for the interest rates to go down and hopefully for us to be able to build more housing.
Fair enough, good.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is your reminder that shoes are a gift, literally. So unwrap something good, like boots that inspire your next big adventure, or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in, or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes, they're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you and everyone on your list at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Points. And this goes back to you as an urban planner. Would you say you're an urban planner at heart?
Training.
So what is it about LA? It is a very nuanced and unique city. What is it about LA from an urban planner perspective that you kind of fell in love with?
So LA doesn't have a center.
Right.
Right.
Right. Absolutely. Like in, not. Yeah.
And when I first got here, I actually found that kind of destabilizing. Right. I was like, what is this city? I don't understand it.
Right.
And then I realized there's multiple centers across Los Angeles and that each of those centers has its own character, has its own story, has its own neighborhood feel. And you can feel that when you go to the West Side, it's very different from Silver Lake. It's very different from Studio City.
Yep.
Right.
South Bay, all over.
Right? You feel the difference across these different neighborhoods. And that's incredible. You get to pick where you live. You build your own community. And that neighborhood, I think, encapsulates what you love about the city. If you like being at the beach, you go live in Venice, you know? If you want to surf every day, you go live out there.
True.
And if you like public transit, hustle and bustle, you want to live a more downtown life, you live in downtown LA, you live in Hollywood, you know, you can get a totally different version of LA based on where you live.
Yeah.
And to me, that was like incredible about this city, that you can have all of these different ways of engaging with the city. And it's all one city ultimately. And it all feels like it still has a coherent identity of being an Angeleno.
It's pretty cool. It used to be 88 cities in search of a center. And now there's definitely like that Los Angeles identity.
Yeah.
Even with the different permutations from the different neighborhoods, communities, and regions. Talk about mass transit or public transit for a while. That's also an issue that's been kind of more, at least since I've been doing LA in a Minute and in a Minute with Evan Lovett, that's kind of had more and more prominence, whether it's the Sepulveda Transit Corridor, the new lines being built. What's the overall perspective, especially with all these big events coming, starting with the NBA All-Star Weekend, World Cup, Super Bowl, Olympics? I mean, that's going to be a huge, huge talking point, huge factor. Talk to me about mass transit.
Well, I think that we are
public transit.
Public transit, I think, is exciting.
Yeah.
The city of LA is investing in big public transit expansion at a time when many of those investments are not happening across the country. We're actually building more train lines through Metro than many other places across America.
Right. And it is. We started from the bottom.
Now we're at the top.
Yes, right.
But, you know, I think that is really exciting. And what it does for me is it allows people here to have a choice.
Yeah.
Right. Having two cars, which I felt like a mandate in LA, like if you have a, you know, felt like a mandate, is very expensive. Imagine now you're in a city, the housing costs are incredibly high, and you have to have a car, two cars
and
to go to work, right?
And all the costs
that go along
with it.
Right? Public transit opens up a different way, a different opportunity, a choice that you can make to say, okay, if I live near this transit line, maybe we just have one car for our household.
Right.
Or maybe we, in certain neighborhoods, we don't have a car at all and we rely on other modes of transit.
Shout out Culver City, by the way.
Yeah.
They do a great job.
Okay. So public transit for me is like that idea of opportunity that encapsulates what LA means to me.
Yeah.
It's that same thing. It's like opportunity, choice. It's like, okay, I don't have to have a car to live here, or I can choose to rely on a car less as a family.
Do you foresee Los Angeles ever being a city? I don't want to say ever, but in the foreseeable future of being a city where you don't need a car?
I think certain neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. In certain parts. I think it depends on where the investment comes in.
It's fair.
You know?
It's fair.
I don't think you could do that in across the whole valley, for example.
Right. That's what I always think. Right.
Right.
Exactly.
But I think if you live near, like if the Sepulveda Transit Corridor gets built, goes into, in, you know, up through the Sepulveda Pass and allows people to get from Ventura Boulevard to UCLA, you could do that without a car. You know, it would be a very different way of living in the valley, but I think that it could be, it's a possibility that definitely opens up that we don't have right now.
And that involves looking into the future. And I think that that's something that you've done pretty well. And I'll go as far as saying great is you have a vision for Los Angeles in the future. And this is something that I've always kind of, again, been fascinated with.
Yeah.
Your outlook. And maybe it's because, you know, you were from India, then Massachusetts, and then kind of this urban planning background.
Yeah.
But your Los Angeles is kind of different than the status quo. And you know, I always feel like you're sort of lighting a fire under, bad choice of words. You're always, you know, sort of pushing the city to, I don't want to say take chances, but look at what it can be as opposed to what it is. Is that accurate? Would you say?
I think that cities need to grapple with change in order to be resilient.
Yeah.
You have to. Like, that's part of what a city is that it grows and changes at all times, right? Los Angeles has often been defined by a resistance to change, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that resistance to change, particularly in the opposition to new housing, which has defined this city for a long time, it was the primary political movement in the 80s. Like, we used to build a lot more housing, and because of an active political movement against new housing, we stopped building.
Wow.
And that effort to reduce construction here has now resulted in an affordability crisis that is driving people out of the city and a homelessness crisis that is driving people onto the streets, right? So if you have that as your analysis of Los Angeles, in order to preserve what we love about LA, the fact that it is welcoming, the fact that it's a place of opportunity, the fact that people have disposable income to go visit restaurants and go to small businesses and support all of the incredible activity that makes LA what it is.
Right.
The fact that people have an opportunity to take a chance on themselves, to write that script, to write that song, to start that business.
Yeah.
All of that requires affordability. And that does mean that in order to preserve what we love about Los Angeles, we have to accommodate more housing in Los Angeles.
Yeah. And that's something that you, even in our private conversations, have really kind of, you know, opened my eyes to, where it's like, you have to embrace the change while also recognizing the fact that this is what made LA amazing in the first place.
Yeah.
I remember one of our conversations, and even today, you know, it's like, it's the immigrants and the people who come in that initially need to just find a place to settle and live to produce all these things that are great and the things that have made Los Angeles great. And we can't lose sight of that because it is that new vision and the new, you know, people that are coming in that make this city great.
But I think that you can do that in ways that don't sacrifice what you love about your neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's
something we need to realize.
Yeah.
Me personally, absolutely.
Those two things don't have to be in conflict with each other.
Right.
That's what good, thoughtful planning can help us to do. And that is, I think, as you know, I've seen this, for example, in just in the Southern San Fernando Valley, right? You see people coming here, you see younger families moving here, you see them sending their kids to schools here. And then they grow up and then they can't afford to live here anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Fact.
Mm. And now they're saying, oh, maybe it would be better if there was an apartment here.
Absolutely.
That where I could see my grandkids.
We got friends moving out of the city. Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so that's what I'm saying is, like, you don't have to let go of what you love about LA in order to make LA resilient into the future. And I think that's the way in which I approach the city. And of course, it's going to be challenging because change is always hard.
Yeah.
But we're changing right now in ways that people don't like. So let's make that change into something that makes LA better, that makes LA resilient, that actually builds the LA dream again. And I think we can do that.
And I love this because LA has always been the city of tomorrow, the city of the future. And we kind of lost our way in a little bit.
Oh, that's
so looking at that and being in the forefront instead of just reacting is something that's super important. I know we're running out of time. Couple other issues I do want to get to. Number one, this isn't necessarily, you know, district related to you, but it's important. Hollywood, the industry, what can we do? What are we doing? I know there have been some tax credits and things like that.
Right.
But that is the lifeblood of Los Angeles.
Absolutely. I think it is, you know, I know it very personally. My husband's a writer. We've seen the ups and downs of this industry.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that it is in a rut right now, right here in Los Angeles, is really a scary thing for LA.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people think about Los Angeles and Hollywood and they think it's all rich people, you know, actors and, you know, stars and creators and stuff. And actually, when you say it's a lifeblood of LA, you say that because of the hundreds of people who work on sets.
Of course.
Right?
Absolutely. The key grips.
Costumers. Audio. You know, all of these people who are working across all of these different departments to make the movie or the show that you love.
Yeah.
All of them live in LA.
Yep.
And they are some of the best crews in the entire country. You know, we've just trained up some of the most incredible most talented people here. I think the tax credit is going to make us more competitive.
Right.
We've already seen now shows are coming back to LA.
Starting to see a little filming.
You know, my on Radford, there's more activity on Radford, which is really exciting, right? Which means, guess what that means? That means restaurants in the neighborhood are getting lunch orders. That means, you know, crew is getting, you know, spending money in the neighborhood again. Like, it doesn't just matter for that
the
show.
The activity is so helpful. And it just lifts the spirit of people when you have a healthy, you know, these micro economies turn into bigger economies.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But is the tax credit enough? I don't know. I think we're going to see how much money comes back into LA as a result of it.
Yeah.
And we're going to keep advocating for the state to continue doing that. We can't let all these productions decamp for Georgia or for Canada. You know, we have to make them come here, and we have the crews and the talent to make it worthwhile for them to be here.
That's the important
if we can just help them make the math work a little bit, right?
Right.
I think people want to shoot here.
Absolutely.
People want to shoot here. We just have to make it possible for them. The only thing I would say is that I want to hit back at the affordability question.
Yeah.
When you have a downturn in the entertainment industry, and this isn't the first time we've had a downturn in the entertainment industry.
Right.
That is an industry of ups and downs, right?
Yeah, like anything else, absolutely.
How do you make sure that people who are working in that industry are able to weather a downturn if their cost of living is astronomical? And if their housing costs are so high, they will leave.
Yeah.
And so that, I think the two for me are really connected, you know, and I don't want to, I am obsessed with housing, but
I think it's fair though. I think it's fair. You're making great points for it across the board. It affects everything.
I hear it like Sherman Oaks Little League parents.
Sherman Oaks Little League.
Yes.
Yeah.
You and I both have kids at the Little
League. There we go.
I talk to parents who are telling me that they are choosing away from LA because of this exact thing.
It's true.
You know, they used to work on sets here. They're not getting the jobs that they used to. And then the math just doesn't work for them.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to leave.
Nope.
You know, our children under five, our population under five in Los Angeles has gone down precipitously.
Yeah, I've seen that with the schools and the vacancies and the school campuses and everything, which is...
That's not good for our future. Yeah. That's not good for our future. That's people choosing away from LA. That is what we need to change.
Right.
And whether it's the entertainment industry or any other industry, like, that is the core problem.
It's a good point. I know we're running out of time. Last major thing, Olympics.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm very happy that there are going to be some venues in the Valley.
Yeah, but very exciting.
Talk to me about the Olympics. Just give me an overall view, your perspective. I know there's a little bit of controversy. There's a big no Olympics movement. I doubt that's going to happen. I know our federal administration has said some things, but the Olympics are happening in 2028.
Yeah. Look, I have some worries about the Olympics with the federal government's posture right now, with ICE being so active. With people being afraid to come to America because they're afraid that they're going to be arrested at the border or, you know, whatever it is. I have some real worries. I have some real worries about cost overruns and how we're on the hook. The city's on the hook for that, right? And so there's some real concerns about that. Olympics are happening here.
Yes.
Right? And so my perspective is, how can we get the most for our city and how can we get the most for our district?
Yeah.
So if there are, you know, there's going to be squash at the NBC Universal campus, right? So what does that mean for improvements around the area? Yeah. There's going to be activities at the Sepulveda Basin. Well, my district surrounds the basin.
Yeah.
So how do we make sure that pathways into the basin are as beautiful, as incredible as they can be?
The basin can be a pretty awesome resource. I'm not going to call it Griffith Park, but Griffith Park for the Valley.
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Sepulveda Basin is an incredible place.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, I have the tiniest little sliver of it in Encino. But I'm proud to even represent that sliver. It is an incredible place and it can be more if we make the right investments.
Right.
And so for me, it's about what are the investments that we're making in the Olympics that are going to benefit Angelenos over the long run? And that's really what I'm looking towards for the district and for the city as a whole.
Do you think we're prepared? Do you think we're going to be prepared?
We will have to be prepared. We will have to be. You know, there's nothing like a deadline to get you moving. And so that's, you know, I think of it as it's a challenge to the city and to this whole region, which often has trouble working together.
Right.
A deadline can be a very clarifying thing.
Yeah.
And so I think it will push us to work together. It'll push us beyond the usual kind of the fragmented nature of our decision making.
Yeah.
It will force us to be focused. And I'm going to use every opportunity I can to make sure that we're making the progress that we can.
Awesome. And I think with the big events preceding that, it's going to be a good, like, not a dry run. These are going to be live runs.
Oh my God. Yeah.
But
I just want to say, like, we have World Cup next year, yeah. right? Wow. Are we going to be able to have community events where people can celebrate together?
Yeah.
How can we use this to actually bring neighborhoods together in new ways?
Yeah.
How can we test it out before the, we don't have to wait till 2028 right. in order to test this out. In fact, we have to try it beforehand, right?
There we go.
I don't know if you've ever come to, in our district has started using Van Nuys Sherman Oaks Park a lot more.
Yeah.
Where we have concerts in the park for the first time. So we had a Taylor Swift tribute band. We had Stones versus the Beatles tribute bands.
You know, all that stuff.
Thousands of people have come out to the park.
Yeah.
Sat in that area, out picnicked. Food trucks are there. They're dancing. It's all ages. We're activating spaces that weren't active before as centers of community coming together.
Yeah.
Now make that, you know, 10 times larger for the Olympics. And I think we could have a vision of how we celebrate the Olympics here in Los Angeles that yeah. is about LA and LA communities coming together. And that's what I'm really excited
that's
about.
That's an awesome vision. I appreciate that. Okay. Now, before you go, what does Nithya Raman's LA look like in 20 years, in 2045?
Oh, gosh. I think it's, you know, LA has always been, for me, a city of effervescence,
okay.
right? Cool. It is a place of possibility and magic, whether it's the light, whether it's the art, whether it's the entrepreneurialism, yeah. whether it's the people you meet, and whatever it takes to make sure that LA has that into the future. That's the vision of LA that I'm fighting for.
Okay. So what are the next, what's the progression for you personally? And I have seen some rumors bandied about that you may be running for mayor. And again, it's all rumors,
yeah.
but address that. Tell me what does your future hold?
You know, as someone who found herself in politics almost accidentally,
yeah.
you know, I would just say that I'm really pushed by the idea of where I can be the most useful.
Yeah.
And right now it feels like I'm the most useful right here. Council member for Council District 4.
Right.
The chair of the Housing and Homelessness Committee, pushing a better vision of how we can address LA's most pressing issues. And, you know, I'm really excited to be doing it.
Sounded like a potentially. we'll see. She's running for mayor. All right. Well, thank you, Council Member Nithya Raman. So appreciative of you being here. And I'm appreciative of everything you've done in the district. We don't always see eye to eye on every issue, but you're not going to see eye to eye on every issue with any politician. And to be honest, I know this. Your heart is in the right place. You are passionate about this city. You love this city. And that's all we can really ask. And you're making things happen in a tough environment.
Yeah.
I see progress with my own eyes in this district. So I thank you. And I thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Evan, for having me. And also just for being willing to discuss issues that are painful sometimes, yeah. right? Change is hard. Dealing with challenges is hard. Talking across difference is hard, but yeah. you always do it. And I'm always so grateful for it.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate you being here. And this is Council Member Nithya Raman, who may or may not be running for mayor. But thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Go to council. Have a great rest of the day
thank
and
you.
Great rest of the year.
Yep.
Thank you so much. All right, LA, it's been a minute.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Airo. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detecttheSOS.com to learn more.